ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। 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 Please take the 12th chapter, text 18 and 19.
Samashatrau cha mitre cha
kathamanapamanayoho
shitoshna sukha dukkheshu
samasanga vivarjitah
तुल्य निन्दास्तु
तेर्मौनी संतुष्टो येन केनचित् अनिकेतस्थिरमतिर् भक्तिमान् मे प्रियो नरः। One who is equal to friends and enemies, who is equipoised in honor and dishonor, heat and cold, happiness and distress, fame and infamy, who is always free from contaminating association, always silent and satisfied with anything, who doesn't care for any residence, who is fixed in knowledge, and who is engaged in devotional service, such a person is very dear to me.
Yetu
dharmamritamidam
yathoktam
paryupasate
shraddhanamat parama
bhaktaste tiva me priyah. Those who follow this imperishable path of devotional service and who completely engage themselves with faith, making me the supreme goal, are very, very dear to me. So in that previous verse, there is a word called bhaktiman, isn't it? After steramatir, bhaktiman me priyo naraha. Bhaktiman means one who is engaged in devotion to me, Krishna says. So in the 13th chapter 8 to 12 verses, you will also find in the 13th chapter 8 to 12 verses, Amanitvam, Adambitvam, Ahimsa, Kshantira, Arjivam. So there are 20 different type of sadhanas explained in those verses. How one can transcend the kshetra or the body. We'll be discussing it there when we come to that. The body is called as a kshetra. And the soul is called as kshetrajna. Jna means knower. Kshetrajna. So there are 20 items of knowledge given by which actually they are not a part of the kshetra, but they can destroy the kshetra. What is the meaning of destroying kshetra? Like, just like Buddhists also say, desire is the root cause of all evil, they say, isn't it? Material desire is actually the root cause of all evil. So material desire is the root from which the material body is sprouting again and again and again. Or material designation is the cause of repeated occurrence of the material body upon the soul, again and again. Multiple desires we have, so multiple bodies we get, multiple material bodies. Otherwise the soul is completely pure and is Sachidananda Vigraha. In the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, there is a verse which says, Jarayatyashu Yakosham Nigirnam Analoyatha. Kapila tells his mother Devahuti. Jarayati means actually burn. What should we burn, he says? We should burn the subtle body. Actually, the subtle body is the root of the gross body. Gross body, the body which we see with our eyes, this is coming from the Manbuddhi-ahankar, subtle body. So that Manbuddhi-ahankar should be completely burnt of all the material tendencies, identification with the body. Then he says, by such purification, the soul will be totally liberated. Then he will have a spiritual body, with which he can enter into spiritual world. So, you will find in the 13th chapter 8 to 12, there is a description how one can go above the kshetra, or the field of this material body. Why the word kshetra is used there? Just like a cow sometimes is grazing in a field. You tie a cow to a pole like this, the cow can go all around and within that radius she can graze. Isn't it? Not outside that. Similarly, we all have a kshetra or a field that's offered to us where we can exercise our freedom. We have that freedom, but not absolute freedom. It's a limited freedom. Like every one of you, you can think of our kshetra in which we are situated. Everyone is in a particular field, like you're working for a company, you're staying at a home, you have certain relatives whom you influence. And then you'll find that within that field, situating yourself, you are performing karma. And that can be karma or vikarma, akarma, being situated in a particular field. And we all are in a certain field. But the field gives you opportunity for doing action, and that action produces the punya karma, papa karma, or akarma. And the living entity actually does activity and gets results, gets another body. And again he does activity, gets results, gets a third body and fourth body and so on. It goes on like that. So in the 13th chapter he says, Krishna says how there are 20 types of sadhana explained, which is 20 types of methods of knowledge. Amanitvam, adambitvam, ahimsa, kshanti, rajavam, acharya, pasam and all that. There he says, mayicha ananya yogena bhaktir avyabhicharini. Vivikta desha sevitvam aratir janasansati. There Krishna says that. Mayicha ananya yogena bhaktir avyabhicharini. So there you find the word mayicha ananya yogena bhaktir. Why the word cha is used there? Even if your bhakti is not so pure, I will still accept it, Krishna says. Even if it is mixed with jnana or yoga, it is not a bad idea to begin with that. But ultimately you have to offer ananya bhakti. Ananya bhakti. Ananya means nothing else should be present. No other alloy element should be present there. Sometimes you find generally in alloy, one metal is prominent, and other metals are in fraction, isn't it? That's what we call as an alloy. Similarly, the bhakti can also be alloyed with jnana or yoga or karma. So we call it as karma mishra bhakti. We call it as jnana mishra bhakti, yoga mishra bhakti. Like in Bhagavad Gita, you find the beginning, third chapter, fifth chapter, and all Krishna is explaining about karma yoga. Then he is explaining in the 6th chapter, 8th chapter about the path of Ashtanga Yoga. In the last 6 chapters, there is description about the Jnana Yoga. You find that in all these things, there is a mixture of little bit of bhakti. Because without taking help of bhakti, none of these paths can stand alone. They all need the help of bhakti. All these paths. That's why it's called as Jnana Mishra Bhakti, Karma Mishra Bhakti, Yoga Mishra Bhakti. So, everyone's bhakti is alloyed with one of these 3 items. For example, somebody can appreciate Krishna or God based on the intellectual understanding they have. Uddhava, for example. Uddhava was a student of Brihaspati. So, he could appreciate Krishna and Krishna's greatness by having a deep understanding of the Vedanta. By understanding a deep science of the absolute truth. So, Krishna saw that Uddhava, by dint of his knowledge, he is understanding me, but he thought that it is better for him to learn from the gopis of Vrindavan, the Shuddha Bhakti, pure bhakti, unalloyed bhakti. So he sent Uddhava to Vrindavan to go and give a message to the gopis. And Uddhava there, exactly whatever Krishna wanted to happen, that happened. When Uddhava saw Yashodamayi, when he saw Nanda Maharaj, when he saw the gopis, his heart melted. And then he understood, actually my understanding of Krishna is very puny. It is useless. Because although I have the knowledge, I haven't attained the platform which the gopis have attained. The kind of spontaneous devotion that gopis of Vrindavan are experiencing. So he felt himself very insignificant. In fact, when he opened the letter which Krishna had given to read to the gopis, he was trying to give a purport to that. Purport based on the knowledge he got from Brihaspati, elaborately. But the gopis were very eager. They said, directly come to the message, tell us the message. They were not interested in Uddhava glorifying them. Their love for Krishna was pure and spontaneous. Their hearts were completely innocent. So, we can see when there is a jnana mishra, when there is a mixture of knowledge, then there is some amount of speculation in that. There is, because knowledge and speculation go hand in hand. Like you find Maitreya also. He is jnana mishra bhakta. Similarly, you find there are yoga mishra bhaktas also, who do ashtanga yoga, but who also do bhakti. Like you can see Dhruva Maharaj. He performed ashtanga yoga. In fact, Narada Muni wanted to give him Siddha Bhakti directly. In fact, Narada Muni was testing him also in the beginning. He told him, why don't you go back home? Why are you, you know, searching for God in the forest? And nothing serious happened to you. Better go back home and play with your brother. But he didn't hear. In fact, he said, my dear Narada, your advice, you know, will not benefit me because I am from a Kshatriya family. And he said, you know, although you are giving me a good piece of advice, this may be suitable for a Brahmana but not for a Kshatriya. I am deeply insulted and have come to take revenge by performing severe penances. So I find in yoga there are a lot of austerities, tapasya, the kind of tapasya that Dhruva performed. You know, once in 3 days, you know, drinking only water, then drinking only air, eating only dry leaves. Gradually he even reduced that also. Later on, once in 12 days, he may take a little bit of puff of air. And that also he stopped. The kind of severe penances he performed. So that is why we also find there was a desire in his heart to get a kingdom greater than his grandfather. That was a material desire. So it's a mixed bhakti we find there. Similarly, there is also karma mishra bhakti. Karma mishra bhakti means one performs karma yoga, one performs bhakti, but there is a desire to worship Krishna but at the same time enjoy the fruits. You will find many demigods praying to Krishna. Even when Krishna delivers them, they will not request Krishna, please send me back to spiritual world. But they would prefer to go back to heavenly planets. Can you give an example?
Indra.
Isn't it? This is a famous example. Indra, Nalakur Manigrif. Isn't it? Now, why should Krishna send Nalakur Manigrif after so wonderfully delivering them back to the heavenly planets? Why can't he dispatch them to spiritual world? There are various reasons. Actually, Krishna does many things in one shot. Yeah, whenever Krishna does an activity, there must be multiple reasons for that. One reason is that he knew that they still have a little desire to be in the heaven and complete their term before they attain the Shuddha Bhakti to go to spiritual world. So if somebody, sometimes a devotee is not prepared and you give him a dose, like somebody chanting 4 rounds, you tell them, start 16 rounds from tomorrow. Isn't it? They sometimes feel an overdose, isn't it? When you demand like that. Any of your experience of getting overdose from your superiors? Isn't it? Sometimes they feel. So, sometimes Krishna knows everyone in what platform they are situated. So, accordingly he gives them a platform where they can not give up Krishna, but do some kind of Krishna consciousness, Mishrit Bhakti they can do. So, Krishna sent them to heaven where they wanted to be. And there is also another advantage in sending them to heaven, because they can do some preaching work there. They can preach to other demigods and inspire them in Krishna consciousness. also. Yeah, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati says about preaching in heavenly planets, isn't it? He says, no? Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati says in one of his places about how there is so much preaching required in heaven. Yeah. Actually, there are many things that take place. Even sages and saints go there also, you find, isn't it? So, this I heard in one of the saptahas, I heard that they were actually sent to heaven so that they can go and propagate the glories of Krishna for others' benefit also, by going there like that. So Krishna gives people a situation where they can practice Krishna consciousness. So if you see karma mishra bhakti, there is, if you see nishkama karma, sakama karma yoga, then nishkama karma yoga, then one comes to bhakti yoga, shuddha bhakti yoga. So in the path of bhakti, there are 81 types of bhakti, which are explained by Rupa Goswami in the Nectar of Devotion. So our bhakti must be somewhere in between, mixed with little bit of jnana, little bit of yoga, little bit of karma. It may be a mixture of that. Like you see that some devotees are intellectually inclined in describing about what is bhakti or what is. So they have an intellectual bent. So they can only appreciate the verses of the scriptures by understanding the philosophical aspect of them. That's how they appreciate bhakti. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says it's like neem. Some people like neem. Any of you like neem? Or you like Kerala juice? It's like that. On the other hand, there are others who may appreciate austerities more. So they may like to do austerities naturally. And there are some who like activities more, who perform karma for the pleasure of Krishna, offering the fruits of their action. Like yat karoshi, yadashnasi, yadjuhoshi, yadasi yat. That's not Shuddha Bhakti, that is Karma Mishra Bhakti. That verse, which says. Prior to that, Krishna talks about ananyah chinten tomam yejana paripa. That is Shuddha Bhakti. So like that we can understand Karma Mishra, Jnana Mishra, Yoga Mishra Bhakti, we can understand. So here in the 12th chapter, Krishna is talking about the qualities of a pure devotee. That is why the bhakti that is being spoken here is actually completely pure. As he says here, etu dharma amritamidam yadoktam paripasate shraddhadhana matparama bhaktaste ativa me priya. This bhakta about whom the description is being given, advesha sarabhutana maitra karne vachan, all this is talking of a pure devotee. So in Madhuri Kadambini, Vishnu Chakravarti explains, beginning from Shraddha, Sadhu Sangha, Bhajana Kriya, Anarthana Vritti, all those different stages. So if one reads those stages, then one's eagerness for becoming a pure devotee will increase. Actually, we have to increase that eagerness. Lavalyam, Apiyekalam, Mulyam. It is said one should have a greed to become a pure devotee. That greed is welcomeable greed. Unlike the greed for wealth or greed for possessions, greed for honor, and greed for being in the top. So the greed for acquiring Shuddha Bhakti, that is very much appreciated. So the Shraddha, Shraddha Dhana Matparama, he says, the Shraddha that is being spoken about is not just some faith or intellectual faith. This Shraddha is faith in the process of devotional service and faith in the existence of the spiritual world, faith in the existence of Krishna, and faith in the existence of the Krishna Prem in the heart of all the souls. That one should want to attain the Krishna Prema. Like for example, we read about Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when he was living in Gambira, how he would be sleeping in the night, but always the Govinda, Swarup Damodar, they all would be staying outside the door. They would always be anxious that any time Chaitanya Mahaprabhu should not open the door and come out. Because in the middle of the night he may start wandering away. He may go to Jagannath Puri temple or he may go to the ocean. So they would bolt the door and keep him inside, and constantly they would be chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. So they would be awake. But sometimes at midnight, suddenly the door would open and Mahaprabhu would come out and they would have gone to sleep. And he would be calling Krishna's names. Where is Krishna? I want to see Krishna. And then he would go. Sometimes he would go to the ocean, he would jump into the ocean. And sometimes he would go to the Jagannath Puri temple and he would be lying. Lying on the floor in front of the temple. And then Saru Damodar and others, they would go with the lamp, and all the Vaishnavas would be lamenting, searching for him everywhere. And they would go with the hurricane lamp and they would see him lying in front of the temple. And pick him up, he would be completely unconscious. Pick him up and bring him back to consciousness and bring him back to the Gambira. So we find Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu exhibiting the ecstatic symptoms of Mahabhava, which are only exhibited by Srimati Radharani, the supreme amongst the gopis. So actually when one studies these things, one should have appreciation for them. When one hears about Lord Chaitanya's ecstatic love for Krishna, one should feel great joy to hear such ecstatic love in Lord Chaitanya as well as in other devotees. Why? Sometimes people fear, I don't want to, you know, become a pure devotee because he will become mad in ecstatic love for Krishna. And there is a verse in 11th canto which says, one actually becomes intoxicated in the liquid mellows of the holy name. When one is singing the holy names, evam vratasvapriyanama kirtya jata anurago dita chitta ucchaihi evam hasati roditi rauti gayati unmada banditta tiloka bahyaha. This verse says, evam vratasvapriyanama kirtya. The pure devotee of the Lord, when he sings the holy names, ucchaihi means in a loud voice, he is caught in a rapture of ecstatic trance, and the hair stand on end. The tears come like as if coming out of a syringe from his eyes, and the body changes colors, and the heart is palpitating very fastly. And in this way, all the 8 types of symptoms, like we say Ashtavikar, they all appear in the body of a devotee. And in this way, a devotee becomes oblivious to the material world. That is why becoming a pure devotee means spiritually alert and materially inert. That is becoming a pure devotee. Spiritually alert within and materially inert without. This is explained by Rupa Goswami. Materially inert to the attractions offered by the sense objects. That one should become free from all designations in order to become materially inert. That famous verse, it says, no? Cheta prangana sangini vijayate sarvendriyanam kritim no jane janita kiyad biramritai krishne ti varnadvai thunde tandavani ratim vitanute thundavali labdhaye karna krodha kadambini katayate karnarbudebhyaspruham. So in this verse he says, my dear Lord, when I chant this 2-syllable word, Krishna, I feel like having crores of ears and crores of tongues which can constantly relish the chanting of the holy name. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. And when I keep on chanting like that, when they enter my ears, then they enter the courtyard of my heart. At that time what happens? Cheta prangan means the courtyard. Cheta prangan sangini vijayate. He says, Vijayate means they conquer my senses. So much so that my senses become practically dead to the material world. They become practically inert to the allurements offered by Maya, the material world. So currently we will find that our senses very nicely respond to the sense objects. Isn't it? Senses are active. Like the senses are superior to dull matter, Rupa says, no? And the mind is superior to senses. Intelligence is superior to mind. And ego is superior to intelligence, and soul proper is superior to all of them. So when the soul is directly engaged in Krishna's service, then what happens? Then the senses, the attraction for the sense object goes off. One is no more attracted because one is internally alert, spiritually alert. And externally, he is inert. That is why Arjuna asks this brilliant question. Sthita prajnasya ka vasha? Samadhistasya Keshava. Sitadhi, what kind of intelligence he has, and Siddhati kim pravasheta, kim asita, vrajeta kim. He's asking, how does a self-realized person sit? How does he speak? How does he walk? So in that he's asking a question. My dear Krishna, your devotee is also living in this world of sense objects. Is he not attracted to them? Like when a devotee is encountered with the sense objects, how does all of you understand the sense object now? We have been speaking before also. For eyes, for nose, for tongue, for ears and for the skin. For every one of them, we have millions of objects for enjoying. So when a devotee is encountered with those objects, how does he restrain his senses? Then Krishna gives the example of Kurumongani Vasarvasha, the tortoise example he gives. And then Arjuna is asking, my dear Krishna, that means when a devotee is encountered with the sense objects, does he not feel a kind of strong urge to act by enjoying the sense objects of this world? And Krishna says, no, my dear Arjuna. Why? Because he has seen the higher platform. Param drishtva nivartate. Having seen, like sometimes we ask people, are you able to see what I am saying? What is the meaning of seeing? Seeing means one has that understanding, that higher understanding, and one has developed that faith. Sometimes somebody has a financial acumen. Like you talk about interest, you talk about shares and debentures and all, they can easily understand it, isn't it? While the other people will be, will be blinking. What is going on? Isn't it? You need a certain type of acumen for that. Same thing with mathematical acumen if you have. You talk about mathematics, certain people can appreciate. Similarly, if somebody has a high spiritual acumen, they can go deeper and deeper in the practice of Krishna consciousness and achieve a stage where they can see the higher reality. And they develop firm faith in that higher reality of spiritual world, of Krishna, and the five rasas, and Krishna's dealing with gopis and gopas and cows and calves. They develop a very firm faith, deep-rooted faith. And that faith is not just knowledge, that knowledge gradually turns into realization. Over a period of sincere practice, when that becomes more and more realization, param drishtva nivartate, then there are five kinds of coverings upon the soul which are actually created by Brahma at the time of creation in order to keep us bound in the material world. Avidya, the ignorance, the first ignorance, so which makes us think that I am this body. Asmita, false ego. Avidya, asmita, raga, dvesha, abhinivesh. So the avidya, first of all, makes us think we are put in this dark world. So avidya makes us think I am this body. And false ego, then all the things that pertain to my body or connected to my body are mine. One identifies thoroughly with the body. This is a designation. That is, false ego means to identify with the things around the body. Like for example, the house, the parents, the relatives, the friends, children, everyone around us, one becomes caught up in the network of that, forgetting Krishna completely. That is called as false ego. True ego means to know and remember that I am soul, servant of Krishna. Then third is raga. Raga means clinging to the bodily enjoyments. That is raga. One is unable to give up. One is very fond of bodily enjoyments, and in this way one continues the samskriti or the term in the material world. Because the more we identify with the body, then the bodily consciousness is reinforced. That's the problem. The more I act thinking I am this body, to that degree what happens? Then the future bodies are assured. It's very easy, no, to understand, isn't it? Just like a green tree, it produces so many seeds when it is green. So that in the future many, many more trees are produced from those seeds. Similarly, when we are young, we identify with the body so strongly and do so many sinful activities which assure the future bodies. That is why it's a great challenge that one is young, hale and healthy and not be attracted to sinful deeds, but be virtuous. It's a great blessing. So that is raga, clinging to bodily enjoyments. Dvesha means aversion for all types of sufferings, by which one is repeatedly endeavoring to circumvent sufferings of all sorts. by material effort, not by spiritual effort. One has a dvesha for them. So by material effort, one is trying to circumvent the sufferings. That is dvesha. And abhinivesha means its complete absorption in bodily consciousness. Abhinivesha. Abhinivesha. Bhayam vitiyat abhinivesha tasyat ishat apetasya viparyayo asmriti. It says, no? Which one? Abhinivesha is actually, the exact translation is bodily absorption. Bodily absorption means one is so totally absorbed in body, one cannot understand the soul. Imuda nanu prashanti, that platform. They cannot understand the soul or body or God or, you know, karma or nature, nothing enters the ears. One is blunt completely in bodily consciousness. One has absolutely no spiritual awareness. That comes because of too much dose of material sense gratification. One gets completely absorbed like a sponge in the water, no? Like that one is absorbed in bodily consciousness. So, what is bhakti? Bhakti means sarva upadhi. We will recite that verse. Sarva upadhi vinirmuktam. Other can repeat. Sarva upadhi vinirmuktam. Tatparatvena nirmalam. Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhaktiruchyate. One has to become free from all the designations. The designation, we have so many upadhis. For example, I have upadhi, I am a male, or I am a female, or I am an engineer, I am a doctor, I am fair, I am black, I am an Indian. All these are designations. I am tall, I am short, and all that. All these designations actually make us very strongly identify with the body. And because of these things, these five coverings are very strong. So, this is called as Panchatmakam. These five things should be burnt. And in order to burn this, the jnanis and yogis and karmis, they struggle hard like anything. It's a very difficult thing to do, to burn away these five kinds of illusory coverings that covers us. But when one takes to Bhakti Yoga, it is so easy. It is very easy. Acharya has given a beautiful example. Vishnu Chakrakuri says, just like, say you want to, you are having a big stone, a boulder in your hands. Now you want to lift an axe. Because you are a woodcutter, you want to cut the wood. So how will you lift the axe? So when you go to lift the axe, the stone automatically falls off from your hand. And then you lift the axe. And then you start doing your actual business. In the same way, our actual business is to be in the spiritual world and serve Krishna. That's our actual business. But now we are carrying this big burden of the boulder of karma bandhan. We are carrying it. And these five coverings, they can be very easily given up by Rishikena, Rishikesha Sevanam, Bhakti Ruchyate. Engaging the senses in the service of the master of the senses. Then one can attain the devotion. So, we were talking about the Shraddha. So the Shraddha means Shraddha in the process of Bhakti Yoga. That kind of Shraddha. It is not just any Shraddha. There are many people having Shraddha in spirituality. You go near them and talk to them, they will say, I am God, you are God, everyone is God. Like, you know, one gentleman was, the other Sunday I was meeting, he was telling, he said, ultimately we know everything is one, you know, and we are all one, no problem. But he said, but still, you know, bhakti is very nice. So this is Jnana Mishra, you can see that. He likes bhakti, but he has monist contamination. You can see that. So, when one has to take to the Shuddha Bhakti, then one has to become free from these contaminations of Jnana, Karma and Yoga. Then it is completely pure Bhakti. So it's called a selfless unalloyed devotion. That famous verse in Bhagavatam. What is the Parodharma explained in Bhagavatam? Sabai Pumsam Parodharma Yatho Bhaktir Adhokshaje Ahaituki Apratihata Yayatma Suprasidati. So the Lord is called as Adhokshaja. What is the meaning of Adhokshaja? Ada Akshaja. One who is beyond the range of the material senses. What does that mean, beyond the range of material senses? Does it mean He has no form, he has no name, he has no qualities or attributes. As often the impersonal is content. What is the meaning of Adokshaja Lord? Savai Pumsam. He says, Adokshaja Ahaituki Apratihata Yatma Suprasidati. One has to serve that Lord Ahaituki Apratihata without interruption, without any motivation. So this is very important to understand why the Lord is called as Adokshaja. In order to, for one to appreciate the process of bhakti, one has to know how the Lord is Adokshaj. Prabhupada explains in one of the purports about the definition of perfect knowledge. Perfect knowledge, he says, is three things. First, he says, perfect knowledge means to know the supreme absolute truth in all its features. What are the three features of the supreme absolute truth?
Brahman,
Paramatma, Bhagavan. So one has to know the supreme truth in all its features. Then secondly, he says, one has to know that the supreme truth is possessed of innumerable potencies. Like we say, no, parasya shaktir vidavir shivete swabhavaki jnana balakriya. So innumerable potencies are there, material potencies and spiritual potencies also. Innumerable shaktis. Like we see electrical energy, light energy, chemical energy. All these things are material energies, material shaktis. Similarly, Lord has spiritual shaktis also. Sandhani, Sambit, Hladini, there are spiritual potencies. So one has to know that the absolute truth is full of potencies. That's the second thing. And third is how these potencies are very wonderfully, inconceivably, miraculously working according to His will. One has to know that also. When one knows all these three, then we can say that one has perfect knowledge of the absolute truth. Only then one can be said to be having perfect knowledge. Now if you see, jnanis know only the impersonal aspect, so their knowledge is incomplete. Yogis know only the paramatma aspect, so their knowledge also is incomplete. But a bhakta understands that the Lord, although He is supreme, He is personal, but He is not limited by His personal form, as often people think. How can Lord be limited to this one small form of personality? Because devotees know that the form of Krishna, which looks like any of our body, like our body, it looks like that. But what is that personality of Krishna? So when you say about a person, you also count his energies, isn't it? Like when you say the road, the Prime Minister of India is going. So you won't find PM of India walking alone, wearing a, Hawaii chapel, no. You won't find him. When you say Prime Minister is passing by, you will naturally find, he must be going in cars and there must be several cars. Or if a king is passing by, there must be elephants, there must be horses, there must be chariots, there will be thousands of people chanting slogans, Brahmana chanting Vedic mantras, everything. It's going to be a big procession if king is passing by. Same way when we say Krishna, Krishna means immediately Krishna and the energies. In Nectar of Devotion, there is a nice example. Like for example, you call, if a captain of an army is calling, sentry, come here. It includes that the sentry will also come with his weapons. He will come very nicely dressed in the soldier's dress and he will bring his weapon, gun or whatever, isn't it? He will come along with that. So, as soon as you say a sentry, it's understood that he is a soldier, he will wear this kind of uniform and he will carry the weapons and everything like that. In the same way, when you say God, God is never alone. Sometimes you find some picture of Krishna practically standing alone. There is no cow behind, there is no Yamuna flowing, there is no Shrimati Radharani, there are no monkeys, there are no peacocks, poor Krishna alone. they have drawn like that. So Krishna will never be alone, he is always with his associates. Sometimes Krishna is sitting on a peacock. Sometimes he is playing with the monkeys, feeding them butter. Sometimes he is with Srimati Radharani and the gopis. You always see that. He is always with his devotees and with his energies. So, once you understand God in totality, that is why these three things Prabhupada says. You have to understand the perfect knowledge. Now, these limitations are so-called contradictions can be very easily resolved. Like, why the jnanis have a problem with Krishna being a person? They think Krishna is also like you and me. He is having a personality like you and me. So we are limited, isn't it? So he also must be limited. They think like that. But it is said about Krishna in the Upanishads. తత్ ఏజతి తన్నైజతి తద్దూరే తద్వంతికే తదంతరస్య సర్వస్య సర్వస్యాస్య బాహ్యతః. సీ దిస్ కాంట్రడిక్షన్స్. ద లార్డ్ వాక్స్ అండ్ హీ డస్ నాట్ వాక్. ఇట్ సేస్ కెన్ యూ సే అబౌట్ సంబడి లైక్ దిస్? సంబడి సైమల్టేనియస్లీ వాకింగ్ అండ్ నాట్ వాకింగ్. అండ్ సేస్ తద్దూరే, ఈజ్ వెరీ ఫార్ అవే అండ్ ఈజ్ ఆల్సో వెరీ నియర్. ఈ సేస్ అండ్ ఈజ్ అవుట్ సైడ్ ఆఫ్ ఎవ్రీథింగ్ అండ్ ఈజ్ ఇన్సైడ్ ఆఫ్ ఎవ్రీథింగ్. How strange contradictions you see. That Prabhupada says, these contradictions point to the inconceivable potencies of the Lord. Such contradictions can be resolved only when we accept the inconceivable potencies of the Lord. For example, some people ask a question, can God create a stone which He Himself cannot lift? You know this question? Yeah. Which people ask. So if somebody says, yes, God can create anything, what will they argue? Oh, that means He Himself cannot lift. That weight. That means, you know, He is not God. Because there is something which He cannot lift. And if you say, no, how can God create something which He Himself cannot lift? No. Everything in the world is liftable by God. Then they will say, that means He cannot create. Isn't it? So they want to have a double side argument. Like this. So when you apply it on Krishna, the answer to this question is very simple. Can God create a stone which He Himself cannot lift? Yes, He can. Because when Mother Yashoda told Him to, bring some, heavy vessel from the kitchen. So Krishna goes and He tries to even move it, He is unable to move it. You know, the water containing jar. He is not able to even move it from that place. And He tells her, sorry, I cannot lift it. He just waves His hand. It is too heavy for me to lift. At the same time, you find Krishna lifting lower than here. How is it that He cannot lift a small pot of water, but He is able to lift Govardhan Hill? 21 kilometers circumference. Govardhan Hill is lifting with His one tiny finger. So, Krishna defeats the logician's contradiction by doing both the things. On one hand, He says, I cannot lift even a jar of water. On the other hand, I can lift Govardhan Hill. Now you are defeated. So, Krishna defeats very easily like this. Same way, Tat ejati tanejati means Krishna, the Lord walks and He does not walk. It is said, when Kalyavana was chasing Krishna, Krishna was just standing. And Kalyavana was running after Him, but He still could not capture Krishna. So, Lord may be standing and still not be captured by someone. On the other hand, when Yashodamayi is chasing Him, Krishna is running very fastly, but she is able to capture Him. She is able to catch Him. It is said, all the demigods, aneja dekam manasoja viyo, nainad deva apnuvan purvamarshat, tad dhavato. Dhavata means to run. So when the Lord runs in a competition, an athletic competition with the demigods, then nobody can chase Him. Nobody can beat Him. Indra, Varuna, Chandra, Vayu, Rudra, all of them are defeated. But Mother Yashoda is so great that she is able to beat all the demigods in running and she is able to capture Krishna. So again, all these contradictions are resolved only on the platform of love. When Lord is controlled by the love of His devotee, then a devotee can be captured. It is possible. When Lord is controlled by the love of His devotees, He can lift Govardhan Hill. And He can give everyone shelter like that. So, one should know that the Lord's body is not like our body. When He wants to create a child, He doesn't need the help of any consort. Prabhupada says about Vishnu. Even Krishna's expansion, Vishnu, when He wants to create a child, from His own navel He creates a lotus in which Brahma is born. In India, there are a class of people who argue that without Shakti, that Shaktiman cannot exist or Shaktiman cannot do anything. That's why they worship Adi Parashakti or Parashakti, they say, isn't it? But here the Lord proves that without the help of His consort or the Shakti, He is creating a child in the lotus flower, Brahma, isn't it? So you will find that the male God is the one who comes, who is existing eternally, and from Him comes the Shakti. Actually, Radharani actually is expansion of Krishna, as it is explained. So Prabhupada explains this point very specifically in one of the purports, that the Lord can create, simply from His navel He can produce a lotus flower. Is it not an inconceivable thing for us, for anybody to do such a thing? And every one of His limbs of His body are like that. Angani yasya sakalendriya vrittimanti. Any part of the body can do anything. With any part of the body. Like with eyes, he is picking all the souls and putting in the material world. Saha aikshataha. The Upanishad says, saha aikshataha. If God has no eyes, then why should Upanishad say saha aikshata? We are not talking from Srimad Bhagavatam. Saha aikshataha, saha asrijata. These words are used. On one hand, Upanishad say the Lord has no hands, no legs, no eyes like ours. Like we have hands, legs and eyes like the material senses. But the Lord still sees. Saha aikshataha, saha, he still breathes. He still accepts the offerings. Because he has a set of spiritual senses. His whole body is made up of spiritual senses. If you read Ishopanishad, Hiranmayena Patrena Satyasya Apihitam Mukham, that is a very wonderful prayer. We will repeat that prayer. Hiranmayena Patrena Satyasya Apihitam Mukham Tattvam Pushanna Pavrano Satyadharmaya Drishtaye. See, here the devotee is praying. Hiranmayena. Hiranmaya means golden. Patrena Satyasya Apihitam Mukham. He says, Apihitam means to cover. Oh, my dear Lord, your beautiful Mukham face is covered by the dazzling effulgence of your Brahma Jyoti. So, what is he praying? He says, kindly remove that covering so that I can see your beautiful face. Just like sometimes when there is a very bright light, you are not able to see the things properly, isn't it? When the bright light is removed, then you are able to see properly. So he is saying that remove the dazzling effulgence so I can see your face properly. He is praying. So this verse proves that the effulgence of Brahma Jyoti comes from the Lord's body. Like Krishna explains in the 14th chapter, last verse, in Bhagavad Gita 14.27, he says, Brahmanohi Pratishtaham. I am the supporter of the Brahmana. These two verses prove that Krishna's body has a golden effulgence, Brahma Jyoti coming out. Even the Shruti mantras explain, Vedahametam Purusham Mahantam Adityavarnam Tamasaparastar. What is that Adityavarnam? Adityavarnam is color. Aditya means the sun. Adityavarnam. The Lord's body is glowing like the sun. Tamasaparastar, that is existing beyond the tamas of the material world, Andhakara of the material world. We can quote innumerable verses to show that Lord has personality and his personality is emanating the dazzling Brahma Jyoti effulgence. And the Lord's personality is such that it can perform amazing acts, inconceivable activities. For example, everything comes from Krishna, correct? Say if the kasturi smell is coming from Krishna, Krishna's body must be certainly more fragrant than kasturi, correct? Isn't it? Like when Krishna was dancing the rasa dance with gopis, he found that there are, you know, perspiration particles on their face. He just wiped their perspiration particles and the gopis felt as if somebody is keeping a lotus in their nose. It was so fragrant. Krishna's hands were just like some lotus touching their cheeks. So Lord's body must be certainly more fragrant. If Krishna has created the eagle which can fly so high, then Krishna can also fly. You know, Krishna jumps off from a huge mountain, isn't it? Who was putting fire to the mountain? Jarasandha, isn't it? How many miles they jumped? Krishna Balaram? 80 miles from the top they jumped. There is no history of any fracture there, isn't it? Because the Lord's body has no veins. There are no bones. Imagine if we jump even from second floor, we will be admitted in the hospital. There will be no bones, isn't it? Isn't it? Because the Lord's body is asnaviram, shuddham, apapaviddham. Asnaviram means the body of the Lord has no veins. Again, this is from Upanishads. Even this mantra, saparyagat shukram, akayam avranam, asnaviram, shuddham, apapaviddham. Asnaviram means there are no veins or nerves in the Lord's body. But our body is, what is that verse which says? Shatasandhi Jarjaram. What is that verse? Idam Shariram Parinama Peshalam Patati Avasyam Shatasandhi Jarjaram. There are hundreds and thousands of joints and nerves and nerve endings which cause so much trouble and pain to us. Arthritis and rheumatics and all that. But Lord has no such problem. He has a pure spiritual body. So, One has to know the Lord has unlimited potencies. Everything that you see in the material world, that is the reason why in the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna gives so many examples of how powerful is the lion. That means Krishna must be more powerful than the lion. Like how he killed the Kovalayapida, elephant. How he defeated the bulls, six bulls. So one has to read the parakramata of the Lord, the prowess of the Lord, the strength of the Lord. One should also read about the Lord's beauty. Like, you know, we see the beauty of this world and we become so captivated by that beauty. But try to understand how much more Krishna must be beautiful. If some puny creation coming from him can be so beautiful, how much more Krishna must be beautiful? So we can see, when we see the beauty in children or beauty in people, we become captivated by that beauty. But it is a perishable beauty over a period of time. It's a temporary beauty. So how much permanent beauty must be beautiful, you can imagine. So anything we find supreme in the material world, anybody who gets championship in sports, or anybody who gets Miss India or Mr. India or whatever, or Miss Universe or whatever. So Krishna's beauty, Krishna's strength, Krishna's knowledge, Krishna's renunciation, everything should be far above that. You remember in one of the classes we were discussing, somebody lifts 150 pounds, 200 pounds, 220 pounds, maximum is 250 pounds. Anybody lifts more than that? Isn't it? You will see that the champion will be lifting maybe 5 pounds, 10 pounds more, always the number one champion. But when Lord lifts, what he does? His record is outstanding record. After 250 pounds, what is Lord's record? Lifting lower than hell. Isn't it? And in every respect, you can find like that. Same thing with beauty. Same thing with knowledge. Like, you know, what is Einstein's IQ? Einstein's intelligence. So if you compare it with the Lord's intelligence, then it is very puny. There is no one who can surpass his intelligence. So in this way, one should understand that when we, like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was speaking to Sarvam Bhattacharya, he was telling, when you say Bhagavan, Supreme Personality of Godhead, that means he has to have six opulences. It's immediately understood. Always you find the word Shri in front of Bhagavan, always. Like you say Shri Vishnu or Shri Bhagavan Vacha. That very presence of Shri shows that the Lord is always full of six opulences. Always. Bhaga itself means six opulences. So Lord is never devoid of opulence, as the impersonalists often imagine. So Krishna is full of six opulences and is full of potencies and powers, as we were talking. The flying ability comes from Krishna. The seeing ability of the eagle comes from Krishna. Or the every ability that you see, Prabhupada explains about achintya shaktis in this world, in soul potencies. These are all material. And there are also many spiritual also. And all these are coming from Krishna. So one should see that Lord, when we say perfect knowledge, what is the first thing? One should know the Lord in all the futures. One should know there is personality of Godhead, then there is Paramatma, who is the expansion of Krishna in everyone's heart, and there is Brahman, which is the impersonal Brahma Jyoti. That is the first thing. And second thing, one should also know Lord has unlimited potencies. Yeah. And his body is endowed with so many powers. Unimaginable. He is just putting his foot on, Kubja's feet and lifting her and giving her a beautiful body in no time. Similarly, when he puts his foot on a stone, Ahilya comes out, in her previous form. So you can imagine what kind of form Krishna must be having. And when Krishna enters into that Muchukunda's cave, Muchukunda is seeing with his glaring eyes, but Krishna's body is not burnt. But whose body is burnt? Kalayavana's body is burnt. That means Krishna's body is spiritual. Krishna has a personality, but the personality is purely spiritual. So this is very important for a devotee to understand. When a devotee understands that Krishna's body is indestructible, it is imperishable, and it is a abode of all potencies, and it is lovable by everyone. It is object of everyone's love. When one understands these things, that is why the Srimad Bhagavatam very vividly describes Krishna's potencies in various ways. We go from the first canto, you will see as we gradually go ahead, there are so many Mishra Bhaktas in between coming. Like Dhruva Maharaj is coming, Bharat Maharaj is coming, so many different pastimes. And it takes us higher and higher and higher. when it brings us to the 10th canto, where the supreme most of all devotees, the gopis, are introduced. The Vrajabasis of Vrindavan, they are introduced in the 10th canto. So that's why when we read the Bhagavatam gradually, we can see that we are also feeling those impurities in our heart. Like Dhruva has impurity. When you read Dhruva's pastime, you understand, I also have the desire for some material things. I want to achieve some things of the world. As one proceeds, then one will understand. You read the Puranjan pastime, Prachina Barishad, how he is having eagerness for karmakanda, sacrifices, like that. As one proceeds, one will see higher and higher and higher. It becomes, it takes, the first 9 cantos actually take a person through different kinds of people in this world, who are all doing some kind of spiritual path, but it is not completely pure. And it becomes purer. Like, worship of Prahlad is certainly very pure, undoubtedly. But if you read the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, you will understand that the gopis are the topmost amongst all types of worshippers. Ahaituki apratihata yayatma suprasidati. The ahaituki bhakti, which has no interruption. See, here it says, yetu dharma amritam idam, it says. What is the meaning of amritam? Immortal. That means bhakti yoga is immortal. But the jnanis wrongly think bhakti yoga is a stepping stone to attain the impersonal Brahma Jyoti. They think like that. And that is proved here by Krishna to be falsehood. Bhakti yoga is not a stepping stone. What the jnanis think, like I was telling in one of the classes before, you remember? Chaitanya Path and Shankara Math. Remember that? They say Chaitanya Path is very good. You chant, dance, you cry tears, and then always you remain oblivious to the material world. And then when the death comes and you attain liberation, what do? You merge into Brahma Jyoti and become God. That is their goal, which is a very mischievous goal. If anybody does this, you think God is... Prabhupada is saying, why should God encourage competition? In one of the cases, Prabhupada is asking, if you are going to use bhakti only to become God ultimately, why should God encourage competition? Prabhupada is asking. So you will come back. Aruhya Krishna Parampadam Tatha Patantiyado Anadratishmadangraya. They fall down again. But bhakti yoga is actually dharma amritam. Amritam means it is eternal. There is another verse which says the same fact. Susukam kartum avyayam. What is the meaning of avyayam? Again, imperishable. These two verses prove that bhakti is not a temporary stopgap arrangement that is done for purification of the heart. Bhakti is an eternal activity. Today we are bhaktas. When we leave the body and go back to spiritual world, there we will continue to be bhaktas. We will continue to serve Krishna. The means and the end are same in bhakti. Whereas for jnanis, the means is different and end is different. That is why there is duplicity in that path. One gets into duplicity. Here in the path of bhakti yoga, there inside out, outside in, everything is same. There is no... whatever we are doing now, same activities we will do when we go back to spiritual world. There also we will serve Krishna, we will perform the Navavidha Bhakti there. Same thing what we are doing here. That's why it says, dharma amritam idam, yatoktam paripasate. So, Shraddha is actually Shraddha in the path of Bhakti Yoga. And the principles of Bhakti in the spiritual world, in Krishna's existence, in Krishna's potencies, and everything acting according to Krishna's will. So, this Shraddha in the beginning is very komal, very tender. If somehow or other, tasmat kena pipayena, it is said in the 11th canto of Bhagavatam, somehow or other, if one gets the attraction for the path of Bhakti Yoga, one somehow wants to serve Krishna through Bhakti Yoga. We all are very fortunate, because somehow we developed attraction for the path of Bhakti Yoga. Because it is said, it certainly we must have had some contact with some devotee in the past. Because only a bhakta can give bhakti. Bhakti sanjayate bhakti, it is said. So we have got little bit of bhakti, somehow or other we got it. That's why, what is that verse on one of the Vaishnava songs, he says, give me a small trace of bhakti. Shraddha bindu diya, teha Krishna namadana, he says. So one should always keep begging for a drop of bhakti, because if once you get that drop of bhakti, it can be developed. It is like the spark of fire, If somebody tells you, I'll give you only one small spark of fire, that's good enough. You can develop it very easily. Once you have that spark of fire, you put it in a dry hay, it'll just grow very huge. In the same way, bhakti Initially, if we don't have bhakti, we will be going through the path of karma, jnana, yoga and all that for millions of lifetimes. That also Krishna explains in this 12th chapter, isn't it? You know, different paths he is explaining. If you cannot do this, you do this. If you cannot do that, you do this. Like that he says. So we are very fortunate to get a drop of shraddha. And that shraddha actually will be enhanced by sadhu sangha. When we associate with those who enhance our bhakti by teaching the science of bhakti yoga, then by that sadhu sangha, then we come to the bhajana kriya stage, where we chant the holy names. And when we chant the holy names, anarthanavritti will not take place until we come to the namabha stage. There are three types of chanting: aparadhanam, namabhas, shuddhanam. So bhajana kriya is generally the stage of getting initiation from the spiritual master. When one gets initiation, one is supposed to be situated in bhajana kriya stage, where it is called as anishtita bhajana kriya. Anishtita means it is not yet very firm bhajan. We are doing bhajan, sometimes it is strong, sometimes it is weak, like that. So from bhajana kriya, when one goes to namabha stage, namabha is a stage where one is craving for chanting purely. One is regretting, one is repenting, one is lamenting. Durdaivam, 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 bhajani nanu raga. Who says this? Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Oh my dear Lord, what a great misfortune that I am not calling your names very nicely. And in every one of your names, your potencies are invested. All the spiritual names, Krishna, Govinda, Gopal, and all these names. But although you have invested all your potencies, but still I am a fool, I am not calling them out with great devotion. When we regret like this, then we come to Namabhas. Then the Anarthanavritti begins from there. Then when Anarthanavritti takes place, then gradually the heart becomes clean. I was reading a very interesting sentence. It says, in the art of chanting Hare Krishna, he says, one should keep God within, Guru above, mind clear and heart clean. He says, four things. One should keep God within, that means remember the Lord in the heart as super soul, and Guru above, that means always be respectful and obedient to spiritual master's instructions. Then he says the mind should be clear and the heart should be clean. So four things he says. And with this, when one performs chanting, then one will progress very fast. Then from Anarthanavritti, one comes to the stage of Nishtha, Nishtita Bhajana Kriya, which is a deep-rooted Bhajana Kriya. One is very firm. At that stage, even if somebody sways you by giving some false arguments, you will never be swayed. Now we are not anymore tender creeper. One becomes very strong, like a banyan tree, deep-rooted banyan tree. Then one goes to ruchi, the nectar begins to flow. Some other class we will discuss on this. I think some years ago we discussed on Madhuri Kadani, I think, isn't it? Yeah. So that's a very, very interesting subject. Ruchi and then asakti, bhava and prem. So our tender creeper of devotion service is gradually growing. It's growing higher and higher. So we have to very carefully protect it, prevent it, and keep watering it by hearing and reading, chanting, and never allow our faith to waver. By regular association, coming with devotees, one can actually deepen that faith. And when this shraddha develops, one will become a matpara bhakta, a pure devotee like Ambarish Maharaj. So, in this 12th chapter of devotional service, I was talking so much about this jnana also, because the question begins with whether impersonal worship is superior or personal worship is superior. So it's very important for one to develop firm faith in the personality of Krishna. Especially when we talk about faith, when no one is around you, when you are alone, what you do, that is called character. Character means how you behave when you are alone, no one is watching you. Same way, the faith that you have internally, you know, it's very easy to understand a subject, but to have faith in it is a superior step. So that's why Prabhupada once challenged some of his disciples. Do you have faith that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead? So when Prabhupada looked into the eyes of every one of them, they were all feeling very uneasy, because they thought that, you know, we haven't developed such a firm faith in Krishna's supremacy. So in the anarthas, in the four anarthas, maya mugdhasya jivasya nyayo anarthas chaturvidaha hrid darbalyam What is the next one? Kṛddaurbalyam cha aparado asatrishna tattva vibhrama. In that it says tattva vibhrama means svatattva vibhrama. Not understanding about oneself, what is my reality, thinking that I am God is foolishness. We are not God, we are only part of God. Part remains part and whole remains whole. So svatattva vibhrama, paratattva vibhrama. That means not knowing about the paratattva, thinking that everything is impersonal, that's foolishness. Actually, in the spiritual world, there are innumerable Vaikuntha planets, and in each of those planets, the Lord is present in various Vishnu forms. And the supreme amongst all of them is the Goloka Vrindavan, where eternally Krishna performs unlimited pastimes. So one has to know the Paratattva clearly by hearing the Sambandha Tattva from the Vaishnavas. One has to clearly understand the Vaishnava Siddhanta. How the Lord is supreme, inconceivable, yet He is personal. Although He is present in Goloka Nivasati, He is also Akhilatma Bhuto. He is also present in material world, in all the atoms. Andanta Parama, what is that? Andantarastha Paramana Chayantarastham. He is present within every atom. Yet He is present in the spiritual world. So one should understand these inconceivabilities about Krishna. That's very important for one who is... That is why we have to read Srila Prabhupada's Bhaktivedanta purports. It's very important. Because the philosophy is so deep and so profound, there is so much to be understood. And we have been falsely preached by so many false philosophies in the past. So one has to actually develop a firm faith in this Paratattva. Satattva Vibhrama, Paratattva Vibhrama, Sadhana, Sadhya Vibhrama also he says. What is right sadhana? Hare Krishna chanting is the means and Hare Krishna chanting is the end. Sadhana. And the sadhya is also the end. So one should, if you come out of this vibhrama, then we can chant purely. So that is also one of the aspects of this Anarthanivritti or the Namabhas platform. If you clean those four things, then one can very nicely chant above Namabhas, one can come to pure name. So that is Tattva Vibhrama. So we have completed the 12th chapter, Bhakti Yoga. Successfully after many weeks. But this chapter is a very wonderful chapter, and if any of you is interested, you can memorize the whole series of verses in 12th chapter, and you can recite it while going coming. Especially I like this part, Adveshta Sarva Bhutana. These qualities are so wonderful. Because if you keep on reciting those qualities from those verses and keep meditating on them and aspiring for them, surely someday we will get them. And we should be able to appreciate the superiority of Bhakti Yoga and the superiority of a pure devotee over the paths of Jnana, Yoga and Karma. That is why it is said, Bhukti Kami, Siddhi Kami, Bhukti Mukti Siddhi Kami, Sakale Ashanta. Bhukti comes from the Karmi and Mukti is a Jnana Yogi. Bhukti Mukti Siddhi is Ashtang Yogi. Sakale Ashanta, he says. All are without peace. But is Krishna Bhakta? Nishkama. Atayeva Shanta. So we read in this chapter how Krishna Bhakta is Nishkama. His heart is completely Nirmalam. Tatparatvena Nirmalam. Completely pure. The only desire that a devotee has in the heart is to serve Krishna. With one verse I would like to conclude. This verse says, there are five types of muktis in the Vaikuntha planets. What are the five types of muktis? Salokya, Samipya, Sarishti. Yeah. So like that there are, Samipya means in the vicinity of the Lord. Sarishti means opulence like the Lord. Salokya means the same planet. Sarupya means similar form. Sayujya is actually the merging of the soul temporarily. Though maintaining his identity in the body of the Lord or the in the Brahman. So he says, Ekatvam apyuta dhiyamanam na grihananti, he says. Even if the Lord awards these five types of muktis, a devotee will not accept them. Then, vinamat sevanam janaha, it is said. If the Lord says, without service, if the Lord invites a devotee to the spiritual world, a devotee will not go. What does this prove? That means the devotee's ambition is only serving the Lord. If Lord Krishna says, okay, my dear devotee, you have worked so hard. So many Atharva programs you have attended. In so many years, 8 years you have attended. And so much cooking, so many Matajis have done. Huh? And so much effort you have taken in the traffic to travel. Huh? And so many 16 rounds you have chanted so many days. Huh? Now I will give you an easy chair, please relax. The devotee says, no, I don't want to come to spiritual world for that. Simply to relax. If there is service there, you call me there. Otherwise, I will remain here and do service. Hmm? A devotee wants to only do service for Krishna. That is the ambition of a devotee. Hmm? No other ambition, no other aspiration. That is why it is Anya Abhilashita Shunyam Jnana Karma Adi Anavritam. He is free from Jnana Karma Yoga and all these things. Anukulyena Krishna Anushilanam Bhakti Ruttama. That is Uttama Bhakti. Anukulyena, whatever is favorable, a devotee accepts for serving Krishna. Anything that is pratikul, a devotee is ready to reject. Actually, if you take the life of Mahajanas, you will see that every one of them, they accepted what is anukul for bhakti, rejecting all kinds of considerations of the material world. So, I am sorry for going over time today. 8:45 I am supposed to finish. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki, Srila Prabhupada ki. Yeah.